Politics is tough, and it's many cases not a very nice world, but it is a nice world today, and I appreciate very much a transition that's so smooth, it'll be as smooth as it can get.
Yeah. I bet you appreciate a smooth transition. Easier to break the law.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest, and China Lake, California. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX. Y'all got some rain coming. Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADRM, Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets, on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us. Since we opened the phones last week to start out the week, to sort of let it all out following the remarkable re-election of Donald Trump to a second term just about 2 weeks ago, I have heard from a lot of listeners. And if time allows, I will try to open the phones today to some more calls, though we've got so much to get through. Frankly, I do not know that we'll be able to get to calls today or not. At 818-985-5735, if you are in our live Southern California listening area or listening anywhere on the in the world via kpfk.org. But you are, as always, welcome to drop me email any time of day or night at bradcast@bradblog.com, especially if we run short on time today. I should also note that Trump's victory was not quite as remarkable as at least some, including Trump and his supporters, of course, have been painting it since Election Day, as the counting of votes continues today and shows that, well, nope, Donald Trump did not actually win a majority of the popular vote, as has been misreported over the past 2 weeks, though at least for the moment, it appears he has won a slim plurality of the vote with, as of Monday afternoon, he's got a total of just over 49.9% of the popular vote, and that number appears to be falling compared to just over 48.2% for Kamala Harris and about a half a point or so for all of the other third-party candidates combined. And in any event, that margin, Trump's margin over Harris is, in the popular vote, is likely to grow smaller still in the days ahead as blue-leaning states like California continue to tally results. But, you know, anyone who says he won a majority of the vote, think again. I've also heard from quite a few folks since my interview on last Thursday's broadcast with longtime computer science, security, and voting system expert Professor Duncan Buell of the University of South Carolina regarding the letter that he and a number of other cybersecurity and voting systems experts sent to Vice President Kamala Harris last week imploring her to request hand recounts of paper ballots, or at least a random sampling of hand counts in several of the key battleground states. Why? Well, given what we know, and frankly, what we have reported on this program in great detail over the past several years regarding unprecedented breaches, copying, and distribution of proprietary voting system software by high-level Trump supporters in the years following his loss in 2020 in states like Georgia and Pennsylvania and Michigan and elsewhere, well, those computer scientists say it is only reasonable to make sure that the software has not been monkey-wrenched somewhere along the way and to hand count the hand-marked paper ballots in a number of those states. So if you missed that show, is quite a good show. We'll go into great detail on it. You can download it, as always, for free at brandblog.com. And like I say, if time allows, we'll try to open the phones later this hour. But no promises, because I got a lot to get to today. And one of my favorite guests will be here to talk with me momentarily. But you can always find me via email at bradcast@bradblog.com, and at least for now anyway, on the Twitters at TheBradBlog. I'm sure you've been following the flood of wildly inappropriate and or inexperienced nominees that Donald Trump has been rolling out for his cabinet and other top posts in the administration over the last week or so. To cite just a couple of the most troubling for the moment, I'm sure you've heard the concerns from Democrats and Republicans alike about the naming of Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz to be the next U.S. Attorney General, the nation's top law enforcement official. Despite Gaetz having no experience at DOJ, no experience with law enforcement other than when he was arrested and investigated for illicit drug use and sex trafficking of a minor, barely any experience as an actual lawyer, no experience whatsoever managing a large or even medium-sized organization, despite the hundreds of thousands of employees at the DOJ. Over the weekend, it was also revealed by Washington Post that Fox News weekend host Pete Hegseth, who has been tapped to become the next Secretary of Defense, despite having zero experience at the Pentagon or running a large or even medium-sized organization, who will now be in charge of a worldwide organization staffed by some 3 million active duty troops and civilian employees, who was personally blocked from serving with the National Guard during Joe Biden's inauguration back in 2021 due to several white supremacist tattoos that he has on his body. Washington Post is revealed over the weekend that Hegseth has paid off a woman back in 2017 who claims that he raped her. He denies the allegation, of course, though not the settlement payout, but police reports from the incident document the bruises on the woman's body when she started, when she reported the incident days later. Reportedly, the Trump transition knew nothing about that incident, even though they claim to have hired a private firm to help them vet potential administration appointees rather than using the FBI for such vetting. And there may be a number of reasons for that, which I will get to in a moment, but apparently these facts, and they're just facts, you might not care. You might be fine with a guy who has been accused of sexual assault running the Department of Justice, another guy who's been accused of sexual assault running the Department of Defense. You may be okay with that, but these are facts. And these facts are really, really bothering, apparently, the MAGA folks out there, at least based on the outrage that we have seen on Twitter and other social media outlets over the past 24 hours or so since CBS's 60 Minutes ran its own very brief report on some of the incoming administration's nominees. And the MAGA folks are just furious, it seems, about this simple, pretty straightforward, not particularly controversial, fact-based coverage of several of Trump's nominees on the program on Sunday night.
This past week, Republicans won the House majority, and President-elect Trump made nominations to his cabinet. Some nominees appear to have no compelling qualifications other than loyalty to Trump. The nominees are Senator Marco Rubio for Secretary of State, Pete Hegseth to lead the 3 million people of the Department of Defense. He's a combat veteran, most recently a morning show host on Fox News, with no government experience. Former Congressman Matt Gaetz for Attorney General, in charge of law enforcement. Gaetz has been investigated by Republicans for alleged drug use and sex with a minor. Gaetz denies those allegations. Former Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard for Director of National Intelligence. She sought a pardon for Edward Snowden, who leaked U.S. secrets and now lives in Russia. And Robert Kennedy Jr. for Secretary of Health and Human Services, a skeptic of vaccinations. It's up to the new Republican majority in the Senate to decide whether these nominees are equipped to represent the American people.
So, pretty straightforward there. Not particularly controversial reporting, just facts. I'm not sure what has got the Trumpers' panties in a twist over that report, but, perhaps it's because they would rather not focus on the already corrupt process of the Trump transition. In the meantime, by the way, another appointment over the weekend, Brendan Carr, who wrote a chapter for the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025, has been named to lead the FCC in the second Trump era. But yeah, has promised to carry out Trump's wishes to try to take broadcast outlets like CBS, NBC, and yes, here our own Pacifica Radio off of the airwaves any way they can. In any event, I guess they want to make noise rather than have you notice what is actually going on in this, as I say, already corrupt process of the Trump administration, the Trump transition, I should say. As New York Times and others have been reporting, even though we are well over a week out from Election Day, Donald Trump has not yet submitted a legally required ethics pledge stating that he will avoid conflicts of interest and other ethical concerns while in office. Trump's transition team was required under law to submit the ethics plan by October 1, more than a month before the election, that according to the Federal Presidential Transition Act. While the transition's team leadership has privately drafted an ethics code and a conflict of interest statement governing its staff, according to the New York Times, those documents do not include language that is required under the law that explains how Trump himself will address conflicts of interest during his presidency. Since Mr. Trump created his transition team in August, it has refused to participate in the normal handoff process, which typically begins months before the election. That, despite Trump's accepting a gracious invitation just last week, as you heard at the top of the show, from President Biden to meet in the White House, and Trump's seeming promises for a smooth transition process, something that he utterly refused and failed to give to Joe Biden when Donald Trump finally left office after the 2020 election. The Trump campaign has missed or ignored multiple deadlines for signing required agreements governing the transition process, according to the Times. Other outlets have since confirmed their reporting. As CNN notes, Trump's transition team is bypassing traditional FBI background checks for at least some of his cabinet picks while using private companies to conduct a vetting of potential candidates for administration jobs. The failures to sign the required agreements have also prevented Mr. Trump's transition team from participating in national security briefings or from gaining access to the ongoing work of federal agencies to begin the complicated task of preparing to take control of the government itself on January 20, 2025. According to the White House, President Biden's chief of staff had reached out to the Trump transition team, whose officials, quote, say they have an intent to sign the agreements, but they gave no indication of their timing for doing so. That White House assertion came just 3 days after the November 5th election and, of course, over a month past the mandatory statutory deadline for completing and signing those agreements under federal law.
So he's already breaking the law.
You got it.
Hi.
Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi.
But Trump's transition co-chairs, they said in their own statement, quote, all transition staff have signed a robust ethics pledge as a requirement of their participation. Of course, that robust ethics pledge is, and if anyone actually signed it, we don't know, but that robust ethics pledge is currently unknown. Since Trump and his team are in defiance of the Presidential Transition Act by not turning it over to the federal government as mandated by the law. This is being seen right now by ethics in government experts as an early red flag of what many see likely to be a lawless presidency, particularly given that Trump's corrupted U.S. Supreme Court majority already shocked ethics experts and, frankly, the entire nation over the summer when they declared that presidents have virtually complete criminal immunity from any and all crimes that they may perform while they are serving as president, which that's a stark contradiction from nearly 250 years of constitutional rule based on the notion that no one is above the law, even the president. Just as Chief Justice John Roberts, who wrote the stunning Supreme Court ruling last June, told the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee way back during his 2005 Senate confirmation hearings.
I believe that no one is above the law under our system, and that includes the president. The president is fully bound by the law, the Constitution, and statutes.
Huh. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that darling? That was 2005. John Roberts. Almost 20 years ago. But I guess someone secretly rewrote the Constitution between that time and this past summer to allow Chief Justice John Roberts to rule the complete opposite on that issue. That presidents, yes, like kings, are apparently above the law. Ironically, the Presidential Transition Act was amended on a bipartisan basis back in 2019, and it was then signed by then-President Donald Trump. That law to require candidates to create and publicly post an ethics plan before the election, and to, quote, include information on how eligible presidential candidates will address their own conflicts of interest during a presidential term. So, yeah, Donald Trump is already in violation of the bipartisan ethics statute that he signed into law himself. He's already violating his own law. One born in part out of concerns about ethical issues during the first Trump administration. Back when the watchdog group, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, or CREW, identified more than 3,400 conflicts of interest that were tied to Mr. Trump during his first administration. The Trump transition, however, has been completely silent on the question of Donald Trump's own personal ethical conduct, even as signing the requirement agreements would place a $5,000 cap on individual donations to the transition and requires the public disclosure of all of its donors. By refusing to sign that agreement, Mr. Trump effectively faces no limit whatsoever on contributions and does not need to name his donors publicly. Money raised by the transition is not regulated by any other government agency. So, with just over 2 months until the next president takes office, we already have major concerns based on Trump's own actions and his own nominees just since the election of the past 2 weeks. Concerns about an inexperienced alleged sexual predator taking the reins of the U.S. Department of Justice, and if he can even get through the Senate confirmation process. and whether it matters in any way that the apparent president-elect is already violating federal law, given the top judges on the federal bench have already signaled that they're willing to allow Donald Trump to by and large violate any federal law that he likes, at least after he becomes president. And I would guess they won't care much if he violates the law before becoming president, as they have signaled in other cases, even if it means the federal government will be all but unable to function on day one of the new presidency. I got a lot of questions about all of this, and someone, given her actual experience with all three branches of the federal government, I got someone here who may be able to speak to at least some of my concerns. Our friend Lisa Graves is a former Deputy Assistant Attorney General at the U.S. Justice Department. She also served as a former Chief Counsel for Nominations in the U.S. Senate and as a former Deputy Chief for the Article III Judges Division of the U.S. court system. Who could be more perfect to talk to? She's also now the executive director of TrueNorthResearch.org after having spearheaded over many years several major breakthrough investigations into those who are distorting and corrupting American democracy and public policy. Lisa Graves, welcome back to the broadcast.
Oh, thanks, Brad. I have added another set of work with Court Accountability, where I'm also managing director there. So thank you for that lovely personal introduction, but also thank you for the really extraordinary and concise recap of what we've been seeing over the past week or so. I think I may have aged a year in the past week.
But you did such
a good job of recapping it, and really appreciate all of your work this month, previous months, previous years, to really shine a light on these things, Brad.
Well, thank you, Lisa. I appreciate that. And, you know, I know it's a lot for all of us. So, let's start first, I guess, with the refusal to sign these transition agreements, including the ethics agreement, promises to accept no more than $5,000 from anyone or reveal that publicly, and the use of private companies rather than the FBI to vet proposed appointees. So among that long list, is there anything that jumps out that troubles you most about all of this, if it's even possible to choose one among all those concerns?
Yes. Well, let me just start with the FBI background investigation process, because it is a completely unacceptable and a huge red warning flag that he does not want to have the cabinet appointees go through the regular clearance process. Mm-hmm. The FBI background investigation process, which involves this form called the SF-86, you know, an additional examinations, that is a longstanding part of the process for people who are nominated to cabinet positions and other positions. And the FBI has extensive experience doing these investigations. These are literally the type of investigation that goes back to your 18th birthday and is designed to, help look at whether you have any issues that could make you blackmailable. That's part of it, as well as other issues that someone might have. For example, for people who are, seeking access to sort of more than top secret security information, some of our more sensitive information, there are, additional national security assessments, in part, like at the State Department, where the investigators are looking at, do you have stability and trustworthiness, reliability, discretion? Do you have character and judgment, honesty, and unquestionable loyalty to the United States? So, some private firm that is looking at, a credit check or something, that is not the type of investigation that the United States Department of State, that the Pentagon, that the FBI have traditionally used to ensure that people who get positions of trust with access to some of our most sensitive information have unquestionable loyalty to the United States of America, not to a foreign power, that they have a record of honesty, that they have a record of good credit, good character, that they are trustworthy and reliable and stable. And when you look at the people that Trump has nominated or said he's going to nominate when he is sworn in, those individuals have, many of them have serious deficits in more than one of those categories. And not only has Trump said that he is not going to subject them to the traditional longstanding decades and decades long process of FBI practice process, but also he wants to bypass the Senate entirely and install these people without any review by the United States Senate, even a Senate controlled by his own party. That, again, is in defiance of the Constitution, which, you know, specifically has this system of checks and balances, including this advice and consent process, which requires someone to be approved by the Senate before they can serve in the cabinet. And so what you're seeing here is an absolute sort of rejection of the rules. And they're not just rules like in a, you know, card game or something. These are the rules that help keep America safe and help keep our information safe and help ensure that we don't have people in high positions who are subject to blackmail, for example, who might be pressured by a foreign leader or a corporation to do things that are contrary to the American interest. But on top of that, you have this whole sort of grift. Mm-hmm. In essence, it's playing out in plain sight, where you have this idea that people who want business with the government or have business with the government, like Elon Musk, are, you know, being put in charge of agencies, for example, that don't even exist yet, mm-hmm. In order to do what they want without any real checks on what they're doing. And as you point out, Brad, you have Trump himself refusing to sign longstanding sorts of ethics agreements about financial conflicts of interest, which is another area of grift or graft where people can use their government office or, you know, would attempt to use their government office for private gain. And so the whole point of having public offices is that you're serving the public, not your own private, personal, financial interests. And so at every turn, the alarm bells should be going off about just how corrupted, how deviant this administration to be already is based on what Trump has said.
And I should say, you know, you referenced some of the rules that he's just obviously ignoring. But this is not just rules. These are actually federal laws. The Presidential Transition Act, a law that he actually signed himself. Over the weekend, Frank Figluzzi, the former FBI assistant director, warned regarding the use of private firms for vetting rather than using the FBI. He said, quote, private firms have little incentive to seek and find derogatory information that could disqualify someone from holding a clearance, especially if it fears that Trump would react negatively to such findings. He goes on to call it a sham vetting process that could allow people who pose threats to our country's security to regularly access secret or top secret intelligence. I assume you share the concerns of Mr. Figluzzi there.
I definitely do. And also beyond top secret clearance, letter clearance. And, you know, for example, the person who is the director of national intelligence mm-hmm. for the United States has access to some of our most most secret, mm-hmm. most important intelligence weapons to protect America. And to have someone in that post who has, you know, really been acting as if she's Putin's pawn. You know, basically an apologist for Putin, an apologist for the violence in Syria and other places. It's just extraordinary the concerns that I think ordinary people, if they are paying attention to this, should have about some of these choices, because they are, in my view, manifestly unfit for those positions of public trust.
You're referring to Tulsi Gabbard, I would assume, there as the his named as his director of national intelligence or national security.
Yes. National intelligence.
National intelligence. You know, and I don't know, Lisa Graves, if anyone actually runs security and background checks on people that are elected to be president of the United States. But based on what you know from your experience at the DOJ, your experience at the Senate with nominations and so forth, based on what you know about Donald Trump himself already, If they did require a security and background check for people like that, is there any way that Donald Trump could pass one, you know, for even a fairly low level post at, you know, the Justice Department or at the White House?
If he, I mean, I would say, and obviously it's speculation, but I've read dozens and dozens of FBI files, and Donald Trump's track record would raise serious concerns about his trustworthiness, about his reliability, about his, you know, fitness for mm-hmm. having access to information, not the least of which was his, you know, taking of national security files yes. and leaving them in a bathroom yes. at a resort yeah. In Mar-a-Lago, where there were materials that are, you know, key materials, and then waving them around for some writer, you know, at his golf course in, mm-hmm. You know, up in New Jersey or whatever, New York, New Jersey. I mean, he's demonstrated actually, and that doesn't even count, include what he was saying to one of the ambassadors right in the first months of his administration about our capacities. Plus, him refusing to have a U.S. certified translator in his conversations with Putin, trying to keep those off the record. Like yeah. everywhere you look would be red flags. But also, I mean, I'll go so far as to say, like, I don't think Donald Trump has ever read the Constitution. Yep. And I don't think he would even pass the naturalization examination that people who are immigrants who are seeking citizenship here have to take in order to qualify for citizenship, yeah. let alone pass a national security background investigation. But in the U.S. system, presidents aren't subject to those reviews, mm-hmm. but the people that they would choose to have around them are, and certainly should be.
Under the law in question, I was referring to the Presidential Transition Act. The Biden administration may not give transition employees physical access to the 438 different federal agencies that they will soon control, and it cannot allow them to review their files even, according to the New York Times, if they continue to refuse to sign the agreements. So setting aside the criminal concerns, national security concerns and all of that, what might this mean on January 20 if Team Trump doesn't relent here and sign? Are they just going to walk in on January 20 at noon cold, having no idea what has actually happened at those agencies for the past 4 years?
Well, that's possible. And it's also possible that they don't care. They don't care about those rules, those regulations, those processes. They intend, you know, in essence, a destructive agenda for many of those agencies. But the other part, you know, when the Bush team came in after January 20th, 2001, there were a number of people mm-hmm. who were immediately assigned to the Justice Department as political appointees, but they had not yet, some of them had not yet had their FBI background investigation clearances. There was mm-hmm. one person who wanted to meet with the national security lawyers and basically get information from them. And we had to firmly say, you cannot access that information without having an FBI background investigation completed. Uh-huh. And this particular person said to me that he reports to the president and not me. Mm-hmm. And I informed him that he reported to me until the president fires him. He was not going to have access to secret information until he had a clearance. And so we have a related problem, which is if they refuse those ethics issues and the individuals who are being put into these positions, even political appointments, like a lower level appointments, not cabinet positions, mm-hmm. come into those agencies demanding access when they themselves have not been through that FBI background investigation, I think that's going to be seriously problematic. But as you point out, it does mean that they're not getting a head start on information, looking at information or being preparing for the types of responsibilities that those agencies have. But it's also the case that it complicates the entire nature of a transition if you have people coming in who literally have not been through the background investigation process and are demanding information.
And as I remember, and you were at DOJ at the time, but as I remember, the George W. Bush administration blamed the fact that when they came in, because the votes down in Florida, there was a dispute about that in the year 2000, and that the legal fight meant that they did not have as much time on the transition. They actually cited that and their short transition as one of the reasons that for the terror attack in September on 9/11 in September of 2001. They said, oh, because we didn't have enough time for a transition, that might have helped prevent the attack in the first place. I don't know if that's true or not, but yeah.
Well, it was true that there was a slight delay in that transition process because there was not a result yet in terms of the results of that presidential election, who would be transitioning into the White House. Mm-hmm. But also that assertion by, you know, Team Karl Rove was a bunch of nonsense because, of course, that was intended to distract from the August presidential daily briefing, the PDB, mm-hmm. in which George W. Bush would have read a briefing that said Osama bin Laden determined to attack the United States. And also earlier that spring in 2001, basically the Bush administration was downplaying concerns about that sort of terrorism. And so there's Richard Clark's book and other mm-hmm. books go into detail about the ways in which the George W. Bush administration was not prepared for the signs and signals that the intelligence community was presenting to him and his team. And a few weeks delay on the presidential transition had nothing to do with, in my view, with mm-hmm. what happened on September 11th.
In addition to the national security issues, then, there's also just the out-and-out criminal issues. An important provision in these agreements that Team Trump is refusing to sign is the $5,000 cap on transition-related donations and the public disclosure of those private donations, supposedly for the transition effort. Lisa Graves, is there anything that you know of without, you know, signing those agreements? Is there anything that would prevent right now any foreign government, any private corporation, any billionaire, et cetera, from just giving Donald Trump any sum that he may want, any sum that he may ask for, in return for any favors, et cetera? You know, we don't have the campaign laws underway right now. We don't have the transition law underway because he refuses to sign it. So is it not true that billionaires, corporations, foreign countries could just now be giving him millions and millions of dollars personally, and there would really be nothing unlawful about that?
Well, it is an interesting and unprecedented question because we've never been in a situation like this where we've had an incoming administration refuse to sign rules, and as rules that you point out, Donald Trump himself signed into law.
Yep.
The other part is, you know, this question of whether, you know, some individuals or others might just be, they might not want to sign it because they are receiving gifts. Like, the question is, why mm-hmm. are they refusing to sign it? Yeah. Is a legitimate question.
Yeah.
But it's also the case that a climate like this is rife for shakedowns. Wink and nod, like, you know, sure, you want to make this change. Talk to my friend over there
yep.
about how much you want that yep. change to be made. And so I just think it if there aren't untoward things happening, it creates a climate in which people have reasonable suspicions or fears of that, because any I think legitimate or upstanding, trustworthy person or, you know, administration would just, as a matter of course, sign those rules and not seek to evade them by not signing them. But I think, you know, in this area and so many other areas, in essence, you have a willingness or a determination by the head of that operation to ignore laws, ignore legal constraints,
yep.
And just do whatever he wants, however he wants. And I think that is, regardless of whether you voted for him or not, whether you voted for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz or not, like, just as an ordinary American citizen, this sort of behavior is unacceptable for the chief executive officer. And notwithstanding John Roberts' really horrifying
yep.
Effort to immunize Trump and basically pardon him for yeah. his crimes unilaterally from the Supreme Court. Notwithstanding that, it remains the case that the Constitution commands that the president's duty is to faithfully execute the laws. Mm-hmm. And on January 20th, the oath of office is that the president will faithfully execute the laws. And right now, before our very eyes, day after day, you have an incoming president, a president-elect, who is refusing to faithfully execute the laws. And that should concern anyone and everyone, regardless of party or whether you voted at all.
Yep.
This is a big warning sign of danger that he will not bind himself to any rules, even after he takes an oath and with his hand on the Bible and says that he is going to faithfully execute the laws.
And by the way,
he has shown that he's not just now this week.
Yep. Yeah. And by the way, you said that, you know, John Roberts has sort of issued a pardon, not just for the crimes that Donald Trump has already committed. He's giving him a pardon for any future crimes he performs while serving as president over the next 4 years. That's the decision that John Roberts issued back in June, in stark contrast to what he said back in 2005 when he was before the Senate nomination, the Senate committee over his nomination. Lisa, I'm running a little bit late, but I want to very quick, if I can get a quick answer, you know, on this, because you mentioned this a bit earlier. Donald Trump has signaled that he plans to use a never-before-invoked provision in the U.S. Constitution, specifically Article 2, Section 3, interpreting it to mean something that it was never meant to mean, that would allow a president to simply adjourn the U.S. Senate in order to allow himself to subsequently make recess appointments to his cabinet without the advice and consent of the U.S. Senate, without the, you know, bypassing the constitutional mandate for senators to offer the advice and consent in regard to cabinet picks. Lisa, I believe he is going to do exactly that. Is there any reason we should not believe that he is going to do exactly that, to put through all of these controversial nominees that we've mentioned here so far, and we haven't even covered all of them?
Well, he's said that he's going to. It, again, would be unprecedented and basically an act of lawlessness for him to do so and to break one of the fundamental checks on a president that the Constitution provides. You know, there are statutory provisions for acting officials when there's a vacancy. There, you know, is some precedent for a temporary recess appointment when Congress is away and they can't possibly get back to consider a nominee. Mm-hmm. But this is not that. This would be a unilateral act to basically close Congress so that he can do whatever he wants and install people who, in my view, are manifestly unfit. Some of them are manifestly unworthy of the positions to which they've been named to hold those positions. I think it's extremely dangerous. It's extremely troubling. And also, I mean, I just think his party controls that Senate, but he is unwilling to even let members of his own party have a say in who basically governs America. And that is, quite frankly, un-American, unconstitutional, and, you know, unprecedented.
Well, it used to be un-American. I guess we're going to have to change that definition somehow, Lisa Graves. Lisa Graves, executive director now of TrueNorthResearch.org, for many years with the federal government, at the DOJ, at the U.S. Senate, at the U.S. court system. Lisa, I think you're no longer, am I correct? You're no longer on the site still called Twitter?
I am no longer there, but I'm on Blue Sky.
Okay.
At the Lisa Graves.
There you go.
The Lisa Graves.
All right. Yeah, I couldn't find you over there today. I guess you're over at the Blue Sky, the Lisa Graves. Hey, Lisa, really appreciate you joining us today, as always. This is going to be a hell of a next 4 years. So warning in advance, we will be calling.
Thank you, Brad. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Thank you, Lisa. All right, we're going to take a quick break here, and we will come back with a little bit more appointment news breaking today and over the weekend with, hopefully, with Desi Doyen. Maybe your calls if there's time at 818-985-KPFK. Quick break here. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
Hey. What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. A listener called in and wanted an update on the New York case against Donald Trump, where he has been found guilty on 34 felony charges for fraud related to his hush money payments back in 2016 to porn star Stormy Daniels to cheat back then to win the 2016 election. There will be a court hearing, I believe, on Tuesday. Is it a court hearing or documents from Alvin Bragg will be turned in on
Tuesday? Well, I think
Alvin
Bragg, the Manhattan District Attorney, will be submitting his proposal for what should next happen in whether or not they're going to sentence him and when.
The sentencing was scheduled for November 26. It may still be scheduled for November 26. However, last week, Judge Mershon asked, the District Attorney, Alvin Bragg, who asked the judge for another week as they are considering how to proceed in this matter and whether they will still ask for sentencing, given the fact that the guy is going to become president. Maybe that sentence can be deferred until after he's out of office. Maybe it will be dropped altogether. Anyway, I hope to have more on that on, I think, Wednesday's Bradcast, if I'm not mistaken, with George Washington University law professor and former DOJ official Randall Eliason on this show. Also this week, the House Ethics Committee that I mentioned is scheduled to meet on Wednesday regarding the Matt Gaetz nomination for the Department of to be the Attorney General, the top cop in the nation. The House Ethics Committee is weighing whether or not to release its final report on Matt Gaetz into sex trafficking minors, reportedly both a 17-year-old who Gaetz allegedly paid to have sex with and brought over state lines, and another 17-year-old girl who witnessed the act, have testified to the committee. The scheduled committee meeting on Wednesday could, however, get canceled, according to CNN's sources. Members on the committee are weighing whether they can release that report, that ethics report, given the fact that Gaetz has now resigned from Congress when Donald Trump picked him to be his attorney general. House Speaker Mike Johnson said on Friday he does not think the report should be released and is, quote, going to strongly request that the ethics committee not issue the report. Folks over in the U.S. Senate, including Republicans, however, may feel quite differently about that. Some of them have already said they want to see that ethics report as they consider whether Matt Gaetz should be the next U.S. Attorney General. Of course, as I spoke with Lisa Graves there, Donald Trump is already saying, well, you're not going to have to worry about that because I'm going to force the Senate into recess and force these appointments, whether it's Matt Gaetz, Pete Hegseth, Tulsi Gabbard, or anyone else who does not have the experience for the jobs that he has named. On Saturday, Donald Trump selected climate change denier Chris Wright, the founder and CEO of a fracking company named Liberty Energy, to lead the Department of Energy as his new administration continues to take shape following appointments of former Congressman Lee Zeldin, who voted against environmental protections, while a congressperson, he's been tapped to be the head of the Environmental Protection Agency. And on Friday, Trump named Governor Doug Burgum of North Dakota to head up the Interior Department, which, among other things, oversees public lands and the drilling and mining thereon. Desi Doyen, as Bradcast's climate and energy expert and managing editor of our twice-weekly Green News Report, what do we need to know about the appointment of Chris Wright to the Department of Energy and the others.
Oh, well, I think it's important to talk about Chris Wright being the CEO of a fracking company. He is a huge proponent of fossil fuels, and he is also a climate science denier. He is expected to carry out Trump's plans to expand production of oil and gas extraction on the public's lands, and he is expected to end President Biden's year-long pause on permits for new natural gas export terminals.
Even though I should note that the drilling of oil and gas in the U.S. As of December 2023 hit an all-time monthly record high at more than 13.3 million barrels per day. So there has been we are now drilling more than any nation in the world has ever done over the past 4 years, and this guy says we need to expand that?
Yes, and he's going to do it. But basically what he's talking about is not just expanding drilling, but he's talking about weakening regulations on industries that do extraction on the public's lands. Mm-hmm. And he even, okay, so Wright even downplayed instances of fracking chemicals in water, because of course his business is fracking.
Yes.
So back in 2019 on camera, he drank what he said was a cocktail of fracking fluid to show that this is not dangerous. It's okay if it gets into your water. Well, you don't need us to pay to clean that up for
right,
you.
Right.
But it's also what that Wright has absolutely no governing experience whatsoever. So he's going to be taking over.
That's
if he
a plus.
Gets confirmed.
That's a plus. Like all of these guys, they have no experience leading the agency they are about to lead. They have no government experience whatsoever.
Right.
And I think that is exactly what Donald Trump wants, because he can have them do whatever the hell it is that he wants them to do.
Yeah. And so the Department of Energy has a really broad mandate. I mean, it maintains the nation's nuclear weapons. It also focuses on cutting-edge clean energy research and energy efficiency standards. So that, you know, the idea is to reduce Americans' energy usage. Under the Biden administration, the Energy Department has been focused on finding sources and innovations that reduce climate warming pollution and emissions, like solar and big batteries, geothermal and next generation nuclear energy research. But Wright literally denies the threat of climate change. In a video that he posted to LinkedIn last year, he claimed that there is no climate crisis. And so keep in mind here that Wright's comments are provably demonstrably false.
There is no climate crisis. And we're not in the midst of an energy transition either. We have seen no increase in the frequency or intensity of hurricanes, tornadoes, droughts, or floods, despite endless fear-mongering of the media, politicians, and activists.
Okay, that's not fear-mongering. That's just a lot of falsehoods that he put in there. Mm-hmm. So scientific data show that hurricanes are intensifying in strength and intensifying in rainfall. Hurricanes today reach destructive major status of Category 3, 4, or 5 more frequently than they did in the past.
Yep.
And they undergo rapid intensification far more frequently than they did in the past due to record warm ocean waters.
Yep.
The U.S. since the 1970s has seen a significant increase in torrential rainfall events and intense flooding, like the record flooding that we saw in western North Carolina that has killed, you know, more than 100 people. Also in Spain just recently that killed hundreds of people. So
we've been all over the world over the summer and into the fall. This rapid intensification, this enormous amount of water falling like everywhere.
Yeah. So he's just outright denying this stuff. Now, that wouldn't be part of his mandate under the Department of Energy. But under the Department of Energy, he could and will probably quickly roll back all of President Biden's policies and laws and executive guidance that have actually helped reduce the U.S. emissions right now. So, for example, if all of President Biden's policies and all of the provisions under the Inflation Reduction Act, his climate law,
the regulations and so forth.
If all of that goes through on schedule for power plants and tailpipes and all of that, the U.S. would be on track to cut its emissions, is on track to cut its emissions 40% by 2030. So potentially all of that goes away depending upon how quickly these guys move and how durable President Biden's efforts under the Inflation Reduction Act are and, in the face of all of these rollbacks.
And it is that reduction in emissions that nations of the world agreed to in the Paris Agreement that they are meeting still this week out in Baku, Azerbaijan, to discuss how to not just roll them back 40% by 2030, as Joe Biden has been on track to do, but how to go even further. Well, now we've got a new administration coming in that clearly doesn't care about that, has put climate deniers in charge of the agencies that are supposed to oversee that rolling back right. of emissions. And it's terrifying. If you are looking, I mean, if you're looking around at,
really
the effects of climate over the past few months, just between the hurricanes, the storms, the wildfires, and everything else, mm-hmm. it is terrifying where we are heading. In the best of circumstances, these people are about to make the circumstances much, much worse.
Yes, and to go a little bit into the North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, who Trump has nominated to be Interior Secretary, mm-hmm. he would be replacing Deb Haaland, who made history as the first Native American to ever serve as a cabinet secretary. So Burgum is a huge ally of the fossil fuel industry, and Trump has also said he's going to create some new government organization, you know, expanding government again.
I thought they hated big government, and yet they create the Department of Government Efficiency.
Yeah, well, and now this is
two
going
heads,
to be
not one.
The National yeah. Energy Council, which yeah. will be aimed at increasing and accelerating oil and gas production uh-huh. and pipelines, probably will also pursue Trump's agenda to shrink national monuments, such as the Bear's Ears National Monument mm-hmm. That was expanded and then contracted by Trump and then re-expanded by President Biden. In concert with Native American tribes who were demanding
right.
that.
Yeah.
He could also relax regulations curbing pollution on from drillers and from miners on the public's lands. He's also potentially going to help Trump cancel offshore wind development in federal waters. But there is one small bright spot potentially.
Oh, please, Burgum, please bring the bright spot.
Burgum as governor.
Yeah.
His climate views, you know, he actually does seem to accept that climate change is actually happening and is a real thing.
What?
So he, as governor in North Dakota, set a goal for the state to become carbon neutral by 2030. They're not really on track for that, but at least, you know, he said something about yep. it. And he does support some of the clean energy subsidies that Trump is seeking to kill.
Well, he used to support them.
We'll see.
We'll see if he still does once he's working for Donald Trump. The one guy so far, I think, that they named as a nominee who isn't insane. All right. Thank you very much.
So that's where that
is
right now.
That's where that is. Nothing but good news from you, Daz, usual. More good news like that on tomorrow's broadcast with the Green News Report. Until then, my thanks today to Lisa Graves of TrueNorthResearch.org, to Desi Doyen, our producer, to my board operator today, Wendell Handy, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other we have ever done since the beginning of time, you can download them all for free at bradblog.com. No paywall there, thanks to your support. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and site, yes, still known as Twitter. You will still find me at TheBradBlog. Did I say drop me email? bradcast@bradblog.com? Yeah, it's up to you. Anyway, I just did. Said it again. That's it. That's it. Until we see you again, hopefully tomorrow. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.